A is for Alcoholic is a program about recovery. My name is John and I'm an alcoholic.
And my name is Jerry and I'm an alcoholic.
Join us as we go through the alphabet of alcoholism one letter at a time.
Well, I guess for those of you who have been part of the A is for Alcoholic cinematic universe for a while know that Jerry's been a little MIA for the last 2.5 years, I think. Yeah. I know that I haven't recorded anything for well over a year.
Taking
time away and time off, and you know, it was just you get burned out on things, you get tired of things, you get tired of constantly trying to produce something or feel you know, like I just got done. I had a great conversation with a woman last year, and then I had something set up for my trip to New York, and it fell apart. Like the guy ghosted me, or I got lost in the DMs or whatever the situation was. And I'm not going to hassle him. And I finally just sent him one last message and said, well, I'm going to be in New York for another week. If you want to get to me, great. Like I was kind of excited about it, you know, and I was like, oh, and he had agreed. And then it just fizzled. And by the time I got back, you know, I had met this woman, I'd started this relationship, I just kind of things shifted. And I was just kind of, I mean, I hate to say it, but I was kind of just getting burned out on, you know, recovery Instagram and, you know, reaching out to people and trying to sift through every single life coach, sober coach.
Right.
To
right.
people and that I found interesting.
You know, first of all, hi, my name is Jerry and I'm an alcoholic. Still.
And so those of you who are new, Jerry and I did this podcast every single week.
Yes.
2.5, 3 years.
Right. Yeah. About almost 3 years. Yeah. I mean, I went through 3-4 moves doing this podcast. Like I moved from house to another house, and then COVID hit, and then I moved to Arizona. And I don't know if I did the last podcast in my mom's house or if I did the last podcast at the previous house. So I did 3 moves.
Yeah.
And then we did it all through COVID too. And it was, you know, yeah, it really does. And then I imagine, and I wanted to interject because I feel kind of bad, not bad, but I feel like, cause I bounced. Cause I was like, John, this is driving me nuts. Like I felt the same way, burnt out. And I was like, I can't mine for any more content. Like to me, it was less about one point. It was less about parsing through my recovery and my experience as a recovering alcoholic and more about I have to find content now because I'm just repeating myself. Yeah. And so then when I felt like I left, you were like, well, fuck, what do I do now? Like, who do I talk to now? Instead of Jerry, I got to find people that pertain to this niche kind of subject, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Also on top of it, it's become a little less niche. I mean, so many more people are, you know, subscribing to this, well, sober lifestyle or whatever you want to call it. Or is it a sober lifestyle? Do we live sober lifestyles or do we just live lives?
I mean, everything's a fucking addiction if you break it down, I guess.
Yeah,
you know, like,
it can be. Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's far more pervasive. There's a guy that I know in Napa who was a big bartender and he got sober and now he's doing like alcohol-free spirits trivia nights and shit like that, and like
that's cool.
Like, so I mean, I'm not big for trivia nights, but like I'm glad that people are doing something where they're not just getting stupidly fucked up,
right? And there's respite from it. I think it's different for us now that we're older too, because think about it, we started the podcast almost 5 years ago or something,
2000,
and we were like in our mid early 40s, and now I'm 48, I'll be 49 in August, so that's a while away, but we're like getting into our 50s now, and the animal looks different now. It's a different animal. My alcoholism to me now is like a whole, how many 50-year-old dudes you know are sitting in bars going like shots, you know, like. And the ones that are not doing that, they're fucking gently peeing down their leg, you know, like just fucking smoothing that brain out, you know, like, and so to me, the animal's different. Now I'm not going to a party and people are like, oh, you don't drink? That's weird. You know, they're just
they
like,
okay,
really
cool. Care. They're like, great.
They don't. I had a conversation the other day with a woman who was a writer for the International, the paper in Nogales, because we did this art show and they did a write up on it. And she was talking to me about something. And then I said, oh yeah, that's when I used to drink, but I don't drink anymore. And she goes, oh, you quit drinking? I went, yeah. And she goes, was it a problem? Is that why you quit? And I'm like, yeah, I'm an alcoholic. I'm a recovering alcoholic. And this like 80-year-old lady, like it like kind of shook her a little. And I could tell it kind of like, she just kind of, yeah, like that, like kind of looked back and was like, oh, well, how long have you been sober for? And I'm like, oh, like 9 years. And she's all, oh, good for you. Good for you.
And I'm like, I just, yeah, like the question, was it a problem?
Fuck yeah, it was a problem. And it was fucking rad at the same time, but then it stopped being rad, and, you know, but I just think I don't have that conversation anymore because it just goes, Jerry's allergic to alcohol. Like, that's it. Jerry can't drink. Jerry, except he craved, you know, craved the thing he was allergic to.
Right. So, yeah. So I think the podcast was, it was grasping for straws, I think. And there was definitely trying to mine for content. And we would have these text message conversations days before, like, what are we going to talk about? And, you know, trying to come up, drum up some sort of cohesive, coherent idea or message. And it was,
well, then the theme was like a letter, so it'd be like B is for booty quaking or whatever it is, like, you know, C is for canned wine, you know, and yeah, it just sometimes I don't know, I just felt like,
well, and one of the final conversations you and I had was, you were like, and you basically, when you were like, I'm done, and you said, John, I know this is been a part of your recovery and I don't want to take that away from you.
Yeah.
And like, I was like, oh, okay, of course. And I had never thought about it that way. Like, right. Consciously, I didn't think about it. And I was like, oh yeah, I guess it has been. It certainly has been.
I didn't feel responsible in the sense of like, John's going off the rails without me. It's on the catalyst. I felt more like I liked you sober and I wanted you to stay sober. And so I felt like this was part of, in the beginning, helping another alcoholic, but it was helping me too. Like, it was mutually beneficial. I mean, I'm selfish. I'm a fucking drunk. So I'm like, what do I get out of it? You know, but yeah, I was just like, John's doing so great sober. I don't want to cut off the line there. And then I didn't think you were going to go out that night and buy a fucking pint of Thunderbird and, like, you know, get fucking wild in the lawn. But, you know, like, I don't know, man. I saw you doing so well at it that I was like a little reticent. Like, I was a little anxious to leave. Like, I was like, well, maybe I'll just take a break. And then life happens. You know, I got a kid who's 13 years old now. She's in middle school going through life and shit. And I knew I had to deal with all that. And then my Sundays were my, that was part of it too, was my Sundays are my only day to not do shit. And I was like,
and then it's this thing that you have to think about all day.
Well, my brain's weird, dude. Like, you throw in once, and I've told you this before too. Once something becomes an obligation to me, like, I don't want to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. It's so weird, and it's something I have to like deal with. Whatever. Your beard's looking really good, man.
Thank you. It's starting to get shaped up. I'm letting it. Well, my girlfriend trims it now. She does all. She loves to groom me, so she'll come
that's
in.
That's great. Letters. Yeah.
And do it all. And like, so yeah, she's,
I remember COVID at one point with the beard and the hair. And I was like, you're doing something. I don't agree with it, but I'm going to fucking let you go on your own path. You know, whether it's you look like a fucking Irish bog person.
I was, like, that's how I felt. That's how I felt during, I did feel like an Irish bog person.
Did that, did quarantine fuck you up?
Yes. I think quarantine fucked me up in a few ways. Well, one, I wasn't getting haircuts regularly.
Yeah, you look like a wild, like I said, Johnny Fever, Johnny fucking COVID. It was
Johnny
like
COVID.
It,
yeah. I think that I definitely got a little more reclusive because I'd always been pretty gregarious and easygoing and and great to be around and stuff like that. But I definitely just got more reclusive because you start to see in the beginning when we didn't fully understand and then we begin to understand how this thing is spreading. And then you start to see everybody as like a vector for disease rather than a human being. Mm-hmm. And let's be clear, everybody's both. We're all vectors for disease. I mean,
regardless of COVID.
Regardless of COVID. I think quarantine fucked me up a little bit and it made me just kind of like, God, I want to be alone because I want to be well. And then I got COVID and it was one of the worst cases I've heard from anyone. I mean, obviously I didn't die, so it wasn't the worst case, but it was pretty awful. But you know, I think, I'm sort of like, I want to get back to being somebody who's fun and enjoys people. And I do like talking to people. It's just kind of like, you know, things change, people change. I didn't, you know, you're not going to be the same person forever. So, So yeah, I mean, I still like talking to people. You know, it's like I say at work, I love people, but I hate customers.
Yeah, dude, fuck them. Absolutely.
When it becomes an obligation, so funny, too, dude. You know, like one of the other jobs I have is doing social media for a state park here.
Yeah,
and it's great, and everybody is great, and we went to this big and it's the Jack London State Park. We went to this big like volunteer appreciation dinner, and I love working with these people, and it's an amazing park, not only because of the nature, but also because of the connection to the author. Mm-hmm. And we did an episode on that book, John Barleycorn, talking about his alcoholism, which was great. But as soon as it became an obligation and I started getting paid, I was like, oh, now I got to like schedule it into my week. And it's got to be this regimented part. It doesn't become this. It's not this thing that is like fun and exciting, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I struggle with that, but you know, it's good. It's good. One of the things, one, you didn't relapse. You're doing fine.
No. Yeah. You remember. If there is a throng,
because there were emails,
you told
me
there
messages.
Are emails. And no, I'm still sober. I still don't drink. I don't smoke pot. I don't do anything. I don't smoke pot. I don't take ecstasy. I got muscle relaxers for a fucked up back, but I still have most of them.
Did you use them? Did you find it triggering to take the
muscle
relaxers?
No, not at all. It made me fall asleep. And I really needed them because in January of 2023, I had this pinch in the left side of my chest and it wouldn't go away. And I thought I was having like a cardiac event or something because I worry. And I'm in my late 40s and I drank and smoked, you know, as much as anybody could. And I had to go to an urgent care because it's Arizona and there's no health insurance, barely health insurance here. So we went to like an urgent care and the lady started pressing around under my shoulder blades and my back because they took my pulse and my blood pressure. And they're like, no, you're in great health. Like your heart rate's great. Like your blood pressure is awesome for a guy your age. Like the nurse felt my muscles and was like, you work out, huh? And I was like, yeah, no, that didn't happen. But but anyway, they were like, that's so fucking stupid. But they were like, yeah, you're doing great. So it's not your heart. So she started poking around under my shoulder blade and like pushed a button and it flared up. It like pinched even harder, like intense. And she goes, oh yeah, it's this nerve. It's like this radiating nerve that comes off your spine. And it's actually the nerve is like under this muscle and you like apparently pinched the nerve with a muscle. So anyway, that's a long way around to saying they gave me muscle relaxers, but I didn't take them like for fun. Like I took that first one and fell asleep and slept for the first time in days because I was in major panic attack and it let go, like the muscle let go, and there was like 20 in the prescription and I think there's like 16, you know what I mean? Like I found that they knock me out, so if I'm having insomnia I'll like take one, but that's happened once, you know, like but no I don't drink, I don't, I'm still here. I'm
good.
Still fucking,
I mean,
living
I know
sober
that.
As fuck, dude. And sometimes, holy shit. Like, sometimes, yeah.
It's hard.
Dude, my fucking dog. My wife owns a business now, and she runs a rental agency in Nogales, Arizona. And so she represents homeowners. Anyway, she comes home every night, and she has a glass of wine to unwind because she's Megan and she's normal and she can have one glass of wine. And she was out watering the plants and she put the glass of wine on the table, went around the front of the house to water plants. And when she came back around, the wine was gone. And the dog was in the backyard and she looked at me and she said, you didn't drink my wine, did you? And I'm like, no. And then we both look at the dog and the dog was like drunk as fuck, dude. Mm-hmm. Like the dog was absolutely hammered. I had to call the emergency vet because I thought he was going to die because I was like, fuck, wine's made of grapes and grapes are super toxic to dogs.
Yeah.
Alcohol is super toxic to dogs. And the nurse was like, well, is he throwing up? And I'm like, not yet. And she's like, expect it. She's all, he'll probably have diarrhea. Just watch him for 2 hours. She's all, expect diarrhea and vomit. She's all, watch him for 2 hours. If he gets worse, bring him in. And this was like 10 o'clock at night and he just was fucking hammered. Like, it was so funny. Like, he was absolutely hammered. It was funny and sad. Like, I was scared, but I was also like, serve you right, dude. Who the fuck drinks, you know, like a quarter glass of wine? Like, why would a dog want to do that?
I don't know. I mean,
so the dog's got a problem. So I'm like, yo, I'm going to sponsor you. We're going to do 90 and 90, dude. I put a fucking 12 and 12 in his little fucking bed. I'm like, we're going to do this, dude. We got this. I'll work you through it.
Do the 90 and 90 with the dog.
Do the 90 and 90, dude. Me, you, and John, we're going to get a conference call and do the fucking 12 and 12.
Mm-hmm. That's funny. So here's something. My girlfriend's dog, she has a little dog who we call, he's like a little troll because he loves to go dig around in the backyard. And, you know, mm-hmm. they eat cat shit and the whole nine. But figs will fall off the tree and he will grab the fig and he will go find a place and bury it and let it rot and let it decompose. Oh, like he doesn't like it fresh off the tree. But once it is like rotted and decomposed, I mean, I doubt there's any fermentation, but I don't know what his process is. Cause I've seen him grab them from one part of the yard and then walk them over to the other and bury them. So I don't know if he's got like a whole curing process.
Right.
Like there's a whole thing he's got going
on. Fucking bootlegging, dude. He's bootlegging.
So then he'll bring the fig in after however many months. Or there was an old apple that had to have been 2 years old and he brought it inside and he just starts eating it like it's the best thing in the world.
Right.
And so
was he stumbling and shit? My dog was stumbling, dude. My dog was trying to scratch his back and falling over. He tried to lick his ass at one point and fell completely over. And Megan looked at me and she says, oh, I've been here before with you. I was like, word, dude. She says, I've been here with you rolling around the ground. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Brings up some old times.
You should expect vomiting and diarrhea.
And he didn't vomit once. He did diarrhea once. This dog's a fucking garbage can. Like, mm-hmm. he eats whole socks. I'm like, we got to take him to the vet. He ate a sock. And then he'll shit the sock out the next day.
It's like an ankle sock or like a whole tube sock? Or
no, he'll eat. Now he just eats the toe off the sock. But when he was a puppy, he would swallow the entire sock and shit out an entire sock. Like a magic trick. And now he just eats the toe off of it. And then I'll be cleaning up his, you know, going through the yard, raking up all the shit. And I'll find like pieces of, like striped sock. And I'm like, damn, dude, I really like those socks, you fucking dick. And he gets into, we bought hampers, special hampers with lids. He figured out how to open the lids. So now I have to figure a whole new system out. And this dog, man, now he's just drunk. Now he's a big fucking alky. Like, I'm going to get him a little 24-hour chip and hang it off his
collar. For a collar, like a little. but
still
no,
doing meetings.
I haven't been to a meeting in a while. I've been, I meet with my sponsor once a week these days. Mm-hmm. We've been kind of going through some different
stuff. Oh,
that's
good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the one big and serious thing, kind of serious, I mean, you know, we laugh about it all, but on and off over the course of my sobriety in different, you know, and I called you up and had to talk to you about this, but last year when I met this woman, and we clicked right away. Everything was amazing. You know, our first conversation was like one of these things. Well, it was like we met on a dating app.
Right. Like,
and
Bumble
then,
or something.
So this is going to involve sobriety. I swear. This is not just about this is not just a love story, but
that's okay. That's interesting too, though.
So we're texting back and forth. We're messaging back and forth. And then we get, you know, the phone numbers exchanged and, at one point, and everything is going well. And I'm like, I really like this person. She's great. She says, we should probably have a phone conversation. And I said, well, how about now? Because in my mind, every single person I'd met on a dating app had like fizzled out, right? It just goes away, disappeared. Mm-hmm. I know you don't know this, but, so I was like, let's do this so that we can move on with our lives. And then we have this phone conversation. And it lasts like 2 or 3 hours or something.
Wow.
Like that. I was like, this is awesome. Like,
are
you for real? This is super cool. I had to go to New York. I had a trip already planned, so we couldn't meet. Like, I didn't have any time. Mm-hmm. I was working the entire time. I was like, I can't meet you. I have to go. I'm leaving.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to wait 3 weeks. During that course of those 3 weeks, we had FaceTime conversations. We had phone conversations. We stayed in contact, and it was great. And it was a very, I think that we probably would be together regardless, but in the way that we got to know each other was awesome. So it was like this very casual kind of thing. There was no pressure. It wasn't, you know, our first date was on Halloween. So our anniversary is coming up here soon. That's our anniversary is Halloween now.
That's fucking cute. God damn.
It's very cute, right?
Ugh.
So at one point, you know, during all of my sobriety on and off, I had gotten locked into cam models. So I was spending lots of money on internet sex.
Right.
And I was sniffing poppers.
Right.
Which
isn't you sober. Called me and I was like, that's fucking wild, John. I had to be like, no, that's not to you. It's, well, you know what? It's just not. I mean, well, you know, I'm not going to be the one to determine that. It's your recovery.
I'm going to keep my sobriety date. I haven't been drinking. I've talked to my sponsor, mm-hmm. you know, all of those things. You know, and I don't know if this is just part of the podcast, I guess, has always been part of my fifth step.
Right.
in some fashion.
Right.
And so I bring all this up in conjunction with the relationship because, I remember doing it while I was getting to know this person and spending time with this person,
right,
and being intimate with this person. And it didn't right. feel good. It right. felt really rotten and it felt really shitty. Mm-hmm. At one point, you know, she kind of touched the side of my nose, which had been like sort of dry and crusty. And she's like, mm-hmm. Is everything all right there? And I was like, yeah, I don't know. I think, my nose is just dry. And that was the only time I've ever lied to this person.
Right.
And so there was a whole week where, you know, I had to work and I wasn't going to see her. And I kept thinking like, I need to tell her that because I don't want to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't want to engage in these behaviors. I really, really want to let them go. I talked to my sponsor about it. Like, I need to talk to you meeting. So I came over and we sat on the couch and I said, I have something to tell you.
Oh shit.
And I've been thinking about this all week. Mm-hmm. In my mind, I was like, if this is the end of this, that's okay. But I don't want to have to lie to this person either by omission or otherwise. Mm-hmm. And so I told her. And I said, this is what I've been doing. These are the behaviors I've been engaging in. I don't want to do them anymore. Mm-hmm. And we both broke down. You know, this could only have been 2 weeks after meeting this person.
No fucking way.
Because I didn't want to do it anymore, Jerry. I didn't want to have to lie.
Yeah, like, no, I know. So I didn't realize tired it was of it. Only 2 weeks into it.
Maybe less, but like, I don't know exactly.
But she's still hanging around with you now, though.
This is a year later. And right. so it was super emotional. We had this plan for that night that we completely mm-hmm. canceled. And she basically said, you know, so instead of throwing me out, which is what I expected, she asked me a question and she said, so what's your plan? And I was mm-hmm. like, oh, you mean you want to stick around for this? And I had told her, I said, I already talked to my sponsor. We're going to go through the steps about this. We're going to, you mm-hmm. know, do all of the, you know, because I really do believe that the big book can be interchangeable for a lot of things.
I mean, they use the rough connected. Model in NA and gambling.
So, right. Exactly. So all of those mm-hmm. things. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did is I went back and I said, hey, this is what I've been doing. And, you know, she would ask me intermittently, you know, like, hey, how's everything going? Are you still doing that? You know, do I need to worry?
Are you still doing that? And also, you know, I just want to interject it. I fucking love you so much. You're such a trip. You're like, yeah, man, I was fucking with poppers like super hard. Like super it's 1978 hard. Or something. This is what I loved about you though. Like when we were drinking is like, it was always this weird, obscure thing that I would never experience where you're like,
I hit you up that one time in 2008 or something. I was like, you got to try this.
No, you had it. No. See, I did do poppers with you once in 2008 and you were trying to hit me up. We were in your bedroom and I was snooping through your shit and I found one under your bed and I'm like, VHS head cleaner. I'm all, is this Emil? And you're like, yeah. And I took two big blasts of it and it didn't do anything to me.
It might have been an old bottle.
I had a headache. But that was the thing. Like when you told me this on the phone and like, I appreciate the delicacy of the subject, right? And as your friend, I respect that. Like, I know what you had to go through and that was fucking hard, but it's part of it's really kind of funny. Cause it's like, yo, I'm fucking blasting off on videotape head cleaner. And the cam thing is, I mean, not to parse it up or chop it up too much, but I've known you for years. I've known you for over 20 years. Like I knew you were doing that shit like that when we were in our 20s.
Yeah.
So to me, I was like, okay, cool. Like, what are you going to exactly like the fact that this woman's like, well, what's your plan? And it wasn't like, oh, my, you know, like decided not to take it as an offense to whatever you were building as a relationship, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's when you called me about it. I was like, to be honest with you, I was not used to having really frank recovery discussions. It'd been a long time. Yeah. So I'm like, yo, John, just drop some shit on me. You know, like that's what I was thinking. But I was like, but we have these conversations. We have absolutely had these conversations in the past, you know, and yeah. I knew this about you. Like that was part of the appeal. I would go do that shit with you. Like we yeah. were doing that. Like we were kicking at the porn store, just all, what's up guys? And we're like, hey, mm-hmm. we're to fall asleep in the booth over there, you know?
Yeah.
But it's just part of it's the button. I always talked about the button. Like you were just, we have problems with pressing the button that makes us feel good.
Yeah.
You know, and once we realize it's like the dog and the button getting the snack, and then they're just constantly returning back to the button. And then at one point they're just feverishly bashing on that fucking button. And that's what we do. That's what we all have in common as people in recovery and addiction yeah. problems is it feels really good to do the thing we're doing. So we keep mashing on the button, even though it's fucking breaking our hands, you know,
whether it's alcohol or porn or cupcakes or TikTok,
or poppers, poppers or any of that shit. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
if it's detrimental to your well-being, it doesn't matter what the action is. I never agreed with people who are like sex addiction's not real because they watched a dumb South Park episode. I was like, no, that shit is absolutely is real. Like that mm-hmm. is a behavior that is affecting you in a completely detrimental way. Like, yeah. then that can be considered an addiction, dude.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm.
so, I mean, absolutely. I can't thank her enough for actually wanting to talk to me and talk, you know, yeah. work through this. And,
yeah,
you know, I mean, one of the things also, you know, when I think about, I was never defensive and I, you know, I said like, okay, you know, all of my secrets now, you know, them right. all. Like there are no right. more. So whatever right. you want to ask me, you can ask me as often as you want to ask me. Like you can ask me. Like I
was know, she like, oh, so, I really want to pry the lid off of this shit. No,
that wasn't it at all. She wasn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and I've been open about all the other stuff and basically anything else that I've said on this podcast over the last
right. We've said a lot of shit, like a lot on of this shit. Podcast. Yeah,
you know, but that was the that was it, and she stuck around and I met with my sponsor and we discussed it all. Like I did the fourth step. Mm-hmm. I wrote all the shit down. I wrote, cause I think in one of the things that I had omitted was my full sex inventory because I didn't think it was important. Applicable. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's the way I approached it too. I was like,
And not everybody is going to have it as bad as I did and has, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, consensual, kinky, anything, right? Whatever you're into is great.
Yeah.
But it was always affecting me. And I was always in a manipulative position with women and with pornography and mm-hmm. with sex and all of that stuff. And so
right.
we did the whole thing. And, you know, mm-hmm. We're currently, you know, still doing it.
Yeah.
And so it's like, that's the deal, as they say in the rooms.
Right. That's right? the deal. That's, right. Yeah. Absolutely. So,
and one of the things that I used to hear and I used to ignore was that we're only as sick as our secrets.
Right.
And I was like, I'll be fine. Like I've got right. this under control.
I just thought it was handled. A cool name for a punk band, you know, yeah. or like a cool
we're
name.
Only
I
think sick it's as our secrets.
I think it's a punk album. I can't remember. Anyway, mm-hmm. sorry.
Yeah. Is it actually? It should be.
I think it is. Sick as Our Secrets, I think is. I can't remember who it is. Google that. Listener, okay. Google that. Get on it. Jamie, bring up that clip.
So it was like really like it finally hit home. 8 years not drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you have to do this with everything.
Well, we have co-symptoms, right? Like it's not just the alcoholism or the drug addiction or whatever. There's all these little co-things going on at the same time. I can't think of the word for it, but you know what I mean? There's these little symptoms, other symptoms of things going on all around it. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a milieu. It's a gumbo of fucking weirdness, you know?
It is a big gumbo of addiction. Mm-hmm.
And that's part of your milieu. That is. That's it. That's it. And so now you're working it with your tools. Yeah, it always has been. But you're using the tool you picked up in the room. In the mm-hmm. rooms, you're using that tool now mm-hmm. and you're still working with another alcoholic. So That's great. I mean, it's helping you out, you know?
And I just didn't want to lie to anybody. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't want to have to lie.
Yeah.
And yeah, it fucking sucks,
dude. Yeah.
It sucks. Mm-hmm. It's the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And it is such a relief. It's just, it's a big relief, you know? Mm-hmm. And her and I talk about, you know, not wanting to be radically honest or brutally honest, right? Because like,
yeah,
you don't need to just walk around being an asshole to each other.
You don't need,
right,
to hurt, like, motherfuckers' feelings. Y'all know, honesty, you look like shit.
Yeah.
Honestly, no, though.
But, you know, the thing I think the term that she came up with and the thing that really works is like this, let's be unconditionally honest. Like,
yeah,
regardless, yeah, of cool, what's going on. It doesn't, mm-hmm, mean we have to be cruel.
Right.
So, I mean, it's been the single biggest thing in the last year for me that, like, and maybe that's been part of it too, not wanting to get on here without saying, mm-hmm, something about this.
Right.
And in fact, now that
you haven't talked about this before?
No.
Did you just outed it?
Yeah. I mean, so no,
on the podcast.
I haven't.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that was part of why I didn't want to do it anymore. And not that I'm not, right? Like, not that,
right,
I'm not proud, mm-hmm, of everything that we did, but there were even,
right,
moments while we were talking about things previously in, mm-hmm, you know, in the last 5 years where I would have the thought of like, oh, I should say this, or, oh,
right,
I'm skirting the issue, or, oh,
right,
this heads right to the point of what I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
And I would just ignore it. And so, I mean, if we ignore problems, they will not go away.
No, they get worse. They tend to get worse.
They tend to get worse.
They tend to kind of snowball.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm happy. I'm proud of you for fucking being honest with all four of our listeners today.
Yes. I'm sure this will come up on somebody's feed and they will remember, but, and even if they don't, who cares? Like, that's not
right.
I just wanted to
shoot the shit with you, and I've been feeling nostalgic. Like, yeah. I miss you, and so I like talking. I always have good, you know me, I'm like not a phone talker. Like, Coda was even saying it. He's like, if you don't contact Jerry, Jerry won't contact you,
mm-hmm,
which is, I don't know if I've always been like that, but regardless, I've just been missing you and feeling nostalgic. And the other day you came up, like the A's for Alcoholic came up on my YouTube suggestions, and it was you interviewing Ian Gray.
Oh yeah.
And so I watched it. I sat there and drew. I was working on some art for a mural, and I just listened to it and watched it, you know, and just went, oh man, this was great. You know, like, I've known Ian for years, you know, and, mm-hmm, I partied. Ian party favors Ian, you know,
yeah,
like, we partied with his ass, and to see how well he's doing, and he's a cancer survivor and he's selling real estate in Eugene, Oregon and shit, like, that's great. Like, that, I'm so proud of him, you know? And so, but aside from that, I was just like, John's doing well. Like, John's a good interviewer. Like, I should hit him up. And so when we were talking about it, it was funny because I hadn't mentioned that I had watched it. And then we were texting. You're like, you ever want to do a podcast again? I'm like, yeah, sure. Let's do it. Cause it's been a minute. It's been 2 years. And,
mm-hmm,
and it's, I think it'd be interesting to examine where we're at 2 years afterwards and our, like, long-term recovery, as they call it, you know, and,
yeah,
how we cope. Like,
you know, one thing I'm interested in is actually going back and listening to our episodes from like March, 2020 on.
Oh,
and
God.
Like, hearing how all that shit happened. Cause it was a very, interesting time, to say the least.
Well, and that's why I asked you if the quarantine fucked you up too, because like, I didn't think it did, but it did. It like affect,
yeah,
I think it affected all of us collectively.
Yeah,
I really do. I think that fear affected all of us collectively. And I'm not a person without fear. That's bullshit. I'm full of fear. I'm scared all the time. I'm always scared. I'm freaking out all the time. But that fear, like, that's what we were talking earlier about, you know, the vaccinations and the anti-vaxxers and the anti-lockdowns and shit. And I really think a lot of that resistance to it was based on fear, being scared and not having control. And now I can control it by saying, this is bullshit, that they came up with the vaccine too soon, the fucking lockdowns are bullshit, the government's trying to control you. And I'm like, nah, you're just scared, dog. It's okay. Be fucking scared. People are
nobody
real
knows.
On the real fucking dying. Like, they're not making this. It's not an elaborate hoax. It's the for real fucking happening. You can't deny it. It's just, denial is that bitch, you know, it's that bitch. Mm-hmm. Fear and denial. This is not happening. It's not happening.
So let me ask you, how has your recovery, how has your sobriety been in the last 2 years? I mean, we haven't talked in that long.
I don't even fucking think about it. Is that weird, right? Like, I think about it, but I don't. Like, it's a conscious, unconscious thing. It's unconscious at this point. It's not even routine. So in the beginning, when we were first talking, I had maybe, what, like 3 years, 2 years, 3 years in that beginning. Mm-hmm. It's so urgent. And then as time goes, you just kind of ease into it. I think that's why people relapse after 10 years. Is because they're like, oh, it's no big fucking deal. I slayed that dragon. It's unconscious now. But like, yeah. I miss meetings, but the nearest meeting to me is like a fucking half hour drive because I live out in the middle of nowhere. And I'm like, man, I don't know, drive out half an hour to, I don't know. But those are excuses. But I'm still working a program like here, mm-hmm. you know, and yeah. trying outwardly too. I make mistakes. I'm not perfect. I fuck up. But, you know, my big problems are anger and frustration and depression and anxiety, you know, all the mental stuff. It's all internal stimuli. It's not external stimuli I seek, you know. It's all my internal triggers and thoughts and loops I go through all the time. That's what fucks me up, you know. But as far as 2 years after us doing the pod and 9 years sober, like, I am what I am. I contain multitudes, and this is part of it. This is not me as a whole. So like with the recovery meme pages and stuff, some of them I unfollowed because I was like, that's not the whole of your person. It is in the beginning, I think. Yeah. But then after time, you realize this is just another facet of you as a human being. And this is my facet. And I don't think I have it. Like, I'm not better than anybody. Like I said, I fuck up and make mistakes, but I just don't drink. I don't drink, and I still do program shit. Like, I still say serenity prayers when I'm frustrated. I still do my little, you know, feeling of gratitude every night and say all the things I'm grateful for. And instead of praying to God, I'm like the bear and the creator. I'm like, thank you, creator bear. Yeah, mm-hmm. watch a lot of Reservation Dogs, you know? So I'm like, thank you, creator bear, you know? But yeah, man, it's just other than getting older and being afraid of getting sick, you know, like getting old and sick and things not working the way they used to. And like my eyes and, you know, cause you have the same thing. We have presbyopia. We hit our mid 40s and your eyes go to shit. You got to start wearing multifocal lenses. I wear progressives. I have to wear multifocal contacts. And
I've been having to read, I've been doing this a little more and I'm like, do I need a new prescription?
Dude, son of a bitch. And LASIK won't fix it. Cause we're getting old. So they're like, well, you're going to fucking just put a little duct tape on that leak. That's going to come off. So, you know, and I worry, like, I hit 48 and it was a hard few months. Like, I wasn't alcoholism. I was just worried about dying. Like, I was just like, I'm going to die. Like, I've lived more of my life than I have ahead of me. So in 48 more years, I'll be like in my like 96 or something. And that's wild. I don't know. Maybe not. I come from a really strong family, you know, but people around me are getting cancer. People I really care about, you know, have died in the past few years. You know, famous icons, you know, separately than family members dying have died. And I'm like, holy shit, that dude died, you know, like, fuck, dude. So like, to me, my mortality has been coming up a lot lately. I'm like, wow, fear of death. Like, even to the point where I'm like, I still run 2 to 3 times a week. I lift weights I work out 5 days a week. Still, like, I like clockwork, part of the routine. But even when I'm running now, I was noticing on my Apple Watch that I felt fine. I was getting a little winded because I hadn't run for almost 2 months because we had moved. And we were moving, and Arizona hit a heat wave that was insane. So I was not getting up at 4 a.m. to run. I just wasn't doing it. So I was noticing during my runs that my heart rate was hitting the higher zones. I was like, wow, dude, I'm like averaging 160 beats per minute during this run. And I'm not hauling ass, you know, I'm doing, you know, my fastest mile is probably almost like 10 minutes, 20 seconds or something, you know, like I was getting fast near the end, but my average mile was about 11 minutes. You know, sometimes I come at 10:53, but regardless, my heart was going fast for my age. Cause I was like, 165 is too fast. So now I've having to run slow now to keep my heart rate in zone 3, which is 150 is like my top. And with the Apple Watch, I still have to keep running and checking and slowing down. And if I fucking hate it, I hate it. I hate running slow, John. Like I feel like one of those old guys power walking down the street. I'm like, but even, and I used to clown him when I was a teenager. Now I see him and I'm like, good for you. Good on you. You know, but those are the things I worry about. It's like, I'm like, okay, I got to keep my heart healthy. My lung, even though I vape, you know, on my lungs, I got to maybe cessate and do some cessation with the fucking nicotine. That's my biggest vice is nicotine and caffeine.
Yeah. You know?
And even the caffeine I've been slowing down on. I only drink, I I am moderating with Diet Cokes. I moderate my Diet Pepsis. I drink one Diet Pepsi a day now, because at one point I was drinking a six pack of Diet Pepsis a day. Yeah. I was just pounding them. You'd be seeing me on the podcast. I sit down with two tall boys, a fucking Diet Pep or Diet Coke Zero. But I was like, this is not good for my kidneys, dude.
No,
like,
it's not. Mm-mm. And I mean, I'm not going to hassle you, but you got to knock that vape shit off at some point.
I know, you sound like my dad, dude. And I do got to knock it off at some point, because it literally, I walk around with it. You know, I'll paint with it hanging out of my mouth like a cigarette. And more I'm consciously thinking, like, it's still not good. You can still run a fucking 11-minute mile, but it's not good for your lungs, at least. You know, your heart may be doing okay, but your lungs, like, ups your chances for stroke. Like, I had a really good buddy, Eugene, who had a stroke last year. And I was like, fuck, dude. And he chain smoked. I ran into a guy I went to high school with at my daughter is in band, and they did she's in eighth grade, and they played with the marching band down here at Micah Mountain High School in beautiful fucking Vale, Arizona. But anyway, so she's playing with the high school band, and I was walking by the stands because we went to go watch her, and this guy in a wheelchair is sitting there, and he's gray, he's got white hair and a white beard. He goes, Jerry Wagner. And I turn around, and it's a guy I went to high school with. He was my roommate here in Nogales, real good friend, like pretty good friend of mine, really close. He was my roommate, and he's in a fucking wheelchair. He's got jaundice all around his eyes. He's missing all his teeth in the front. And he looks like a 60-year-old man. So we started talking. He's like, I bet you're curious what happened to me. And I'm like, yeah, what the fuck happened to you? And he's like, I wasn't feeling well one night, and my wife took me to the hospital, and I had to get a triple bypass surgery.
Jeez.
I was in a coma. They put me in a chemically induced coma for months, and I'm finally recovering. And he's like, I can walk, but I get tired, I get fatigued, so I just bring the wheelchair because I had to come up the steps. And he's the same guy, same sense of humor. And the problem, his issue was that he chain smoked for 30 years, just chain smoked. No. And the fucked up thing was his teeth had already fallen out before the fucking surgery, before anything. Like I would see him when I was in my 30s, and he looked like an old man because he just chain smoked and ate candy all the time and didn't take care of his teeth. So he was an overweight guy, the big white beard, and he looked like weird Santa Claus. But it was just that, like, shook me, because I'm like, we're 48 now, dude, class of 93. Like, bam, like, us Gen Xers are middle aged now.
Yeah.
You know, and like, we're all turning into our parents. It just trips me out, man. I don't know why I keep getting these little thumbs up. Are you giving me those?
It's hilarious. No, I'm not doing it at all. But it's like,
I wonder why it's
you're
doing
talking
that.
About some serious shit. The little thumbs up bubble beep. Comes up.
I don't know why it's doing that.
Maybe because it's, I don't know, because it's Megan's computer or something. Somebody
yeah,
else.
Yeah, Megan's computer's
up.
Like, way to be profound, motherfucker. but regardless of that, I guess the thought is, like, we're getting older, so we have to hold back the inevitable. And that's what's fucking me up in my recovery in life, is that I have to hold back the inevitable. Because it's inevitable, bro. I got to come to peace with it and come to terms with it. That's all we can do now at this point, is just come to terms of where we're at.
Welcome to the jungle, baby. You're going to die.
You're going to fucking die, you know? And so with my recovery, it's not even backseat. It's there every day. It's in the front. It's in the foreground. Mm-hmm. I will always be a fucking alcoholic. There's nothing I can do. There's nothing you can tell me that I don't know. That's why I get frustrated. I even stop following the Reddit subreddits to stop drinking. And I unfollow the AA one because people are sitting there trying to tell you what you are. Oh, you're not a real drunk or this or that. Like, what the fuck do you know if I'm not a real drunk, Jerry? Right. You know, it's usually a guy older than me named Jerry telling you, well, I drank more than you spilled. Who fucking cares? It's not a contest.
No.
Like, I'm here because shit's fucked up.
And if somebody has found a way to say, or if for them, they're like, I'm not an alcoholic. I had a problem. I fixed it. And now I'm fine. I don't need that label or that name or whatever. Great.
More power to you.
That is, you know, I would again argue that it's on a spectrum of how alcohol affects us all.
Absolutely. I love that. Yeah.
You know, how we all come to alcohol with our own amount of problems and traumas and issues. And get fucked up and or you know, or maybe you didn't really have a problem, or maybe you had a problem and you did fix it and now you don't have to worry about it anymore. Great. I, on the other hand, have to continually keep it in my head, you know, and I'm sponsoring a guy right now. I have been for the last year.
Good for you.
And it's been great. You know, one of the things, obviously, I don't want to share anything, but one of the things that's been great about it is in the very beginning, listening to somebody with the same trepidations and fears and concerns and like stubbornness about things that I had, like almost exactly.
Wow.
And then watching them go like, oh yeah, I guess it doesn't matter, does it? I'm like, no, it doesn't, does it? No, does isn't it easier now?
Yeah,
whatever the thing is. So it's been...
I'm so glad you're saying this, though, because it gives me clarification on some things, you know. The act of sponsoring. Like, I would never sponsor anyone because I never worked my way fully through the steps, you know? So I was like, I don't know. I feel weird about that. And I don't really go... I'm not active in the program. But despite that, they would always say, oh, it helps keep me sober. That's why I'm helping you. It helps keep me sober. And when I see people in early recovery, it gives me a charge. Like I feel excited for them. And I'm like, I remember. But to sit down and have a conversation with someone in early recovery and then hear your own fears mirrored back and you're like, oh, I've been there. It's going to it's gonna be all right. You know, like it's good to hear that because that gives me more clarity. There's always things that were really unclear to me in AA. And I love AA. I don't care. People can have their opinions on it. And there's a lot of negative ones, but it helped me out, man. It kept me sober. Like it got me fucking sober because nothing else, there was nowhere else I could go at that point in my life. I had no other options. I'd go to a smart meeting. I'm like, where the fuck is this smart recovery meeting? It's like finding a unicorn. Like there's no smart recovery meetings in Eugene, Oregon. You're going to find AA, you know, or maybe a Buddhist one that's basically AA, but they take all the God out. You meditate and it's too far away from my house. So regardless of that though,
yeah, exactly.
Everything's too, just like these meetings now they're out in Vail. And so that means I have to drive 13 miles to get to this meeting or drive in town. And like, you know, me and my driving, like I don't drive very often and I hate driving in Tucson. People are crazy here. But regardless of that, to hear someone say, I sponsor this person because I'm hearing myself in it. I'm seeing myself in it. And that must make you feel steady. Like,
well,
like,
yeah, okay, I mean, so
I was there and now I'm here.
It is very true. And I think I may have jokingly said to him, I was like something to the effect of like, look, buddy, you know, this is as much for me as it is for you. So, you know, you can do it or not and take your time and whatever, but like, you know, this is keeping me sober. I'm doing this for me. I'm not responsible for you. Mm-hmm. I will help you and guide you as best I can, but only with what I have, like nothing else. I don't purport to have any sort of secret knowledge other than.
And I think that's what appeals to us as alcoholics too, is what's in it for me. Okay, sponsor the guy, help him out. Oh, I don't want to fucking help anybody out. Like what's in it for me? Well, it'll help you too, dude. Okay, cool. As long as it's helping me as well. You know, maybe that's not the main motivating factor, but it's definitely a little bit of fucking sugar sprinkled on the top of the deal, you know, like what do I get out of it, you know, because I still think like that. I'll be honest, like I'm like, what do I get out of this, or how is this going to inconvenience me?
How is it going to inconvenience me?
How am I being inconvenienced today? I for the life of me do not inconvenience me. I'm a force to be reckoned with.
I wanted to talk to you about one other thing that's kind of little epiphanies that have come up, or big ones rather. Was another one talking with my girlfriend, and we, you know, one of the many things I love about her is that we can have these long, lengthy conversations, and sometimes they're heavy and hard and, you know, nobody shies away from it. It could very easily descend into a fight if people wanted, you know, if we wanted it to, but it doesn't. And one of the things that kind of hit me, one of the truths that hit me was we were talking about me around her family and her friends. And, you know, I came from a place where she has a family and a fairly big family, and she sees them often and she likes them, you know, but gee whiz. As you do too. I did not come from that.
No.
And I don't, I've taken a lot of pains to find forgiveness and love for the family that I still have. And for the people that have passed, my father's gone. And she said something to me that struck me, and she says, John, when you are with my family, when you're a couple things, she said, you're going to need to take interest in these other people. And I don't feel like you have, you know, in family. She said something, what she said was, you have no interest in family. And in a way, I mean, I feel like that's true, because I have sort of recoiled from mine and kind of, you know, settled into my solitude and, you know, I try to have a relationship with, I do have a relationship with my mother, you know, she lives far away, and with my brother, but it's not big, and it was never a big family, and it's not super close. And, you know, she also said that, when you're around friends and my friends and family, you use your customer service voice, your customer service job. And it really hit me because she's not wrong. She was absolutely right. And I was like, oh my God, I've just been kind of faking it and phoning it in a way. I mean, I'm still me. I was talking to my sponsor about it, and he said, oh, so what was the phrase he used? Your professional warmth just isn't doing it for me anymore.
Right. Yeah, dude. Yeah.
And this is something that kind of hit me, and it fucked me up for a night. And I was like, oh my God, well, who am I if I don't know? I mean, and my sponsor assured me, he's like, you know who you are.
Yeah, you too.
But this is something that, you know, I think wanting to be on my best behavior or I'm something I slip into so easy because, you know, I wait tables for a living, and it's like, that's all I do all night long is the professional warmth. And I'm very good at it. And
it's your armor.
It's my armor. And so it's very, here I am 8 years sober, and I'm still kind of like, you know, putting on airs with people's friends and family, people I care about, family that I'm, you know, I'm not used to it, Jerry. It's not that I don't have an interest in it. I just don't think that I'm used to it at all. And so I can trace back my alcoholism is, you know, it's inherent in all of us, regardless of our upbringing, you know, but mine was exacerbated by certain things as a child. So I am trying to think about ways of reconnecting, you know, or connecting with her family in a way that I just had never thought about before. Like I'm a little scared to be myself. You know, that doesn't mean that I need to be crass or rude or
no.
It doesn't mean that I need to fucking, that every other fart joke that comes to my head, I need to share.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But taking an interest in people was something I didn't know that I didn't think that I was being this way. I was totally being this way.
Yes.
So it's just been sort of a new big epiphany, I should say.
Yeah.
And I wonder, so you come from a big family, and you come from a very supportive family who have been sober. And so you can't blame your alcoholism on them. I can't
genetically, goddamn it. And they raised me when they were drunks. No, I can't. I mean, they did though. They did. No, I can't blame them. That's all me, dog. But no, they did raise me and they're drunks. And I come from a long line of royalty as far as alcoholics are concerned. Like it goes far, man. Like it goes all the way out to great, great grandfathers who were fucking hooch hounds falling off of fucking wagons and shit. But it's so funny. I relate to that, to what you're saying about the customer service voice, because I've been having to do these art. Like I just did this art show and I had an opening and a closing reception. So I have to have conversations with people, and a lot of people I know, I grew up around, and some of the people I don't know at all. And a lot of it. And so my daughter was like, well, how do people are going to want to talk to me? My kid's really introverted. She's like, what do I do? And I'm like, use your tattoo shop voice. She's all tattoo shop voice. And I'm like, every time I talk to a person that I don't know, I just turn on the Jerry Wagner is in a tattoo shop, where I'm joke with them a little. I'm a little charming, but I'm also, you know, like I'm not saying anything too risque, but just risque enough, you know, like you check it. Like I have to put that face on because I don't want to, I hate that shit. I want to show my art. I want people to see what I'm doing, but I don't want to sit down and fucking talk, because to me, I feel anxious. I feel like I'm taking over the conversation, or I'm talking too much. Like even now in the podcast sometimes, and I would do it with you even years ago, I would be like, am I start thinking intentionally, am I talking too much? Am I taking over this conversation? But it's the same thing. It's I go through the same thing, not with family though, but just with people I don't know. But I don't have anybody calling me on it because I am so introverted and so inside my own house most of the time, painting or doing whatever, you know, that I don't have a lot of interactions with other people. And when I do, it's really surface in the beginning. Like I would say 90% of my interactions with the public is super surface. It doesn't go any deeper than that, right?
And I think that's fine.
That's
for
what your
public
shit is too. Yeah, with your waiter voice.
But it's not okay when it comes to the people that you care about and the people who they care about. Mm-hmm. Because no relationship will be built on the tattoo shop voice.
That's just the doorway though. Right. And mm-hmm. then from there, you can open it up and kind of get into it more and then let parts of yourself come out. Your girlfriend is Mexican American.
Mm-hmm.
That big family, right? Yeah. Like I'm Mexican American, big fucking family. My wife is white, but raised Mexican American, big fucking mm-hmm. family. Like there's just that. And it's really, I'm not saying it's all race or cultural, but I think that is a big part of the cultural aspect of it, you know, being raised on the border. Like we all had big families and we were all pretty fucking close, you know, like that being said, I left. So I missed out on a lot, you know, I took off to Oregon for 25 years. So, you know, there was a lot I missed out on. So I had to make up for that. But regardless of that, yeah, it's important to us, like raised in that culture, especially she was raised, you know, really deep into Mexican-American culture, like family is super important. And they become your family. They become like, eventually they become your siblings. You know, yeah. You don't think about it until like, I've been married for, 14, 15 years now. And like her sister is pretty much my sister. Her dad's mm-hmm. like my dad, you know, it's strange. It's so strange.
You know, it just struck me. It struck me really hard, mm-hmm. you know, and I felt hurt. And I hadn't felt that way.
Oh, right. Because you felt like she was accusing you of being not genuine.
And she was absolutely right. Right. It doesn't, you know what I mean?
So that's like, even worse because you weren't being genuine. Son of a bitch, you figured it out.
And so, you know, it occurred to me too that like that's where the growth comes, right? That's mm-hmm. where the spiritual growth comes is from those moments of hurt. It is not a cozy Instagram infographic away.
Epiphanies are never easy, dude.
So it was, and it was good, and I'm okay, and I, you know, and I journaled about it, and you know, sometimes, what was it? I think the metaphor I used was sometimes we build walls, and sometimes we build buildings, and sometimes yeah. those buildings collapse on top of us, and we're stuck under the rubble, and we have to, you know, claw our way out, and that's mm-hmm. where the growth comes. So I'm trying to go, okay, you know, this is the quick turnaround time that I think AA has taught me is like, okay, you're hurt. Somebody said something. It's the truth. You need to change something about yourself. Well, what is the problem? How do you do it? Where do you go? And so like within 24 or 48 hours, I'm okay now. Like I don't feel, I just feel like, oh, thank you for bringing that to my attention.
Right.
That
but was... in the initial reaction is like, ow, like ow, what? Yeah. You think I'm being genuine? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, well, you got to, now you got to work on it. Baby steps. Throw in a little fart joke here every once mm-hmm. in a while.
Something.
Throw in a little bit of little dick and balls joke. Just every mm-hmm. once in a while. You got to say nothing. Just two cherry tomatoes and a baby carrot and just put them there and then look at the mom and be like, you like what you see?
I'm not going to do that, but
don't do that.
But yeah, well, just, you know, I think one of the things is that being interested in people, and I am, and I think a lot of my job, I get so burned out and my capacity for empathy or interest really just is done. And all I want to do is revert into the bubble. I want to just hang out with my girlfriend or, you know, whatever it is. And that just needs to change a little bit. I just need to be more open to the people mm-hmm. that care about her and mm-hmm. in turn want her to be happy with me.
Yeah.
And I want them to like me. I genuinely do. I do want them.
Yeah,
to
I know
like
you
me.
Do.
I
yeah,
need
you,
them to like
you
me.
You want her to like you. You need them, right? So, to like you. Yeah.
So I think, you know, as far as epiphanies go, you know, that was my most recent one. And we never stop changing. We never stop growing and blah, blah, blah.
But you messaged me in July and I had this epiphany today when I was washing dishes and I was like, fuck, I might have to do something about this. And you had messaged me in July because you had shared a post of me and I was like, 9 years sober. Mm-hmm. Let's see the thumbs come up, but they don't. And you were like, I had, you know, an old friend of ours, like an old roommate of ours was like, oh, good for him. But that guy's a fucking asshole. Because he's a shit talker. And my reaction to you was super fucking defensive. I was like, fuck that guy. I don't give a fuck. I don't know what I ever did to him, because I still don't know what I did to him. And then today I was washing dishes and thought, listening to music, and I was like, maybe I should reach out to him. Like, there are some people I was really fucked up to that I never, I don't necessarily make amends, I guess, but not really. I don't want to do it for me and be like, I'm sorry to make myself feel better. I just, I don't know, man. I'm just.
Well, that's what the amends is. It's important. You're not doing it just to make yourself. You're actually doing it in hopes.
Exactly. So then I kind of want to, yeah. See, and then I realized too, when I texted that to you, I was like, man, it came off kind of harsh for like no reason towards John, because I was all, fuck that. Like, because I
mean, it was a little harsh on both sides. And I was just like, oh, okay. I don't know what's happening here, but
nothing. I have,
I'm just going to
absolutely no clue. I have no clue, but I probably did something. Says maybe I said something on the podcast and he heard it. Oh no, I probably did. I definitely probably said something somewhere to someone, but
years ago or whenever,
years ago, like a decade ago, because I, it's not in my forte to talk shit about people anymore. Like, I haven't done that. If I talk shit about people, I'm doing it with Megan, you know, with my wife, having our private married people conversation where I'm like, that person's a fucking nutbag, you know, but I'm not going to just go out in the tattoo shop and be like that, you know, I used to do that shit though. So yeah. So that was my epiphany, is maybe I need to fix some shit. Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, it can't, people. It really, it won't hurt other than, no, you know. It's okay to say you're sorry.
And there was a guy I worked with, and they bullied him really hard, and I was part of it. And then years later, I realized, like, man, that poor guy, he's just being himself, and everybody gave him shit about it, and I was part of it. And I felt really fucking bad, like, in hindsight, because I just can't fuck with that. Like, there are people out there who are intolerable. This guy wasn't one of them. But there are. There are people out there who are just, their personality's just, you're fucking, But I was like, man, that dude is just trying to be himself. He's super stoked to be here. And everybody just took a big shit on him. And I was part of it, you know, because
it feels crummy.
You run with the crowd, man. You run with the herd, you know? Yeah. So, those little things where I'm like, as I get older and more sober as fuck, I don't know, more sober. I don't know if I can get more sober, but as I get older and think about life, I'm like, man, I've made some really hard mistakes with people, and like, I don't know, I don't think they walk around thinking about it all the time, but you know,
no, it pops up like, in every, I mean, so here's the thing, we're gonna need you to get a sheet of paper and a pen out, and then you're gonna make a list of these names.
Nah, I still gotta finish that fifth step.
I'm here anytime you want, Jerry.
I might call you up and do that for the sex inventory. That was the one I didn't do.
I mean, that's, I'm
because my sponsor's like, look, Jerry, now you gotta go do a sex inventory. And I'm all, okay. And I started doing it. And then we just never met up after that. It was kind of like we both were, we didn't, I love the person who sponsored me very much, but they were not into sponsoring anybody. And I was too shy to ask anybody to sponsor me.
Yeah.
Like, I was just too, even in the Lambda, you know, my old group, which was the gay and lesbian AA, it was still pretty old school. There were some hard hitters in there, you know, that were like, take the cotton out of your fucking ears and put it in your mouth, you know, that kind of old school shit. So I was like nervous to ask anybody, like, will you sponsor me? You know, I was like really nervous, because I was like, this person, I was scared too, because I was like, you're going to make me do real work that I'm not ready to do. And then as I got older, I'm like, well, I'm not right. I thought I was right. I'm not right. I don't know shit.
I think one of the truths, and I don't know if this is going to help, but you have to do it regardless of whether you're ready or not.
Never be ready. I know. God damn it.
It's never, you know, it's the whole, like, I'm going to wait until I'm motivated to go running or lift weights. And, you know, maybe you've got a little more of a routine there, but you just got to go do it anyway.
Yes, I do have a routine, but I have to motivate. I was supposed to lift weights this morning. I went running instead because I was like, well, I got to do that podcast. And my run usually takes 45 minutes, where the lifting weights takes like almost an hour and 20. And I don't have time. Just go run. Yeah. But yeah, no, it's the same thing. It's deferring. It's deference. It's like delaying the inevitable, you know. And it's right. I'm glad we got to have this conversation today, because I'm like, yeah, I need to work on some of this shit too. Now, will I do it? I don't know. It's just like the weather, man. It's unpredictable. You know, there might be a cold front, it might be a hot front. I don't know, baby.
Well,
but it's in my mind, and I don't know. You're on my mind a lot. I hang around with Coda every once in a while.
How's he doing?
He's on my mind a lot. He's doing pretty good. You know, he's another one of those ones that, you know, sobered up, but has the occasional beer every once in a while. It was really funny. And like, he's not a fucking fall down drunk. I don't even know if he gets drunk at all anymore. You know, he kind of pushes that part of his life to the side with me. We don't really talk about it a lot, but like, I was painting a I was doing this big box. I was doing a mural on this big storage box. And he came out to hang out. And he actually is coming out to help me with a job in Tubac. I'm doing a big mural in Tubac. But that's digression. So the box is like a mobile bar. Like it has a door that slides up. It's a shipping container. So I painted the shipping container. It had these hard seltzers in it. And they were hot. And they've been sitting in there for weeks. Weeks and weeks from the last party they had. And I don't remember what brand it was. But Coda came by. He's hanging out. He's chain smoking his cigarettes. You know, sitting with his legs crossed. High, doing Coda shit. You know, twirling his hair with his cigarettes. And he goes into the thing. And he's checking out. Because there's a sink in there. And keg taps and everything. And it has power. And then he takes one of these old seltzers out. And he's like, I want to try one of these. Like, I've heard of these. I've never had one before. And I'm like, you do you, because I know Coda's not having relapse. He's drank a couple of beers around me, you know, and stuff. And so he cracked the thing open and he took like two sips of this old hot seltzer. And he's all, this is fucking gross. And I'm like, yeah, bro, it's like 2 weeks old and hot. It's literally hot. It's like hot raspberries or whatever. And he literally took the two sips and then put it down and walked away and then just left it there. Like at the end of the night, I threw it away. So I was like, huh, that's not normal alcoholic behavior. Like, even hot, I would have finished it. Like, I would have finished it hot.
Absolutely. I would have found some ice.
I mean, something. There's something. I would have poured out my water in my water cup and held the ice and then just put the booze where the water used to be. But but other than that, like every once in a while, he'll be like, yeah, I had a steak and had like a little glass of wine. But he's it's not the same as it was before.
Yeah, the three of us had a conversation or something, and I was making some gesture toward him about, like, you know, and regardless of, you know, however you do, he's like, I don't need your fucking permission for one thing or another. And I was like, that's Coda, there you go. He's like, you know, with all the love in the world, he's just like, yeah, I don't give a shit what you think. That's what
I'm gonna do what I do. I just don't bust his balls about anything. No. Like, you want to smoke? It blows me away that guys my age are still smoking. Well, it really does. And I'm vaping, but it's a different animal. But to like light the cigarette and have the cigarette, and he still smokes. I don't bust his balls. I like miss it. Like, he'll blow smoke near me. And I'm like, man, I kind of miss that, you know, but it's not for me to tell him. I'm not your dad, dude. No. You know, like, but Dakota's doing well though. I mean, the whole, it's Arizona, man. It's like a whole different reality than Oregon. It's a whole different thing. I'm afforded way more opportunity here than I was in Oregon. Yeah. Though.
So there's something coming up, and you know, for our four listeners to, and I'm part of me wants to come down and visit you at the end of November and fucking and just be there for the weekend and make my short documentary. And there's the part of me that's like, I've got this bigger vision for it.
Yeah.
I want to wait until the next one.
Right.
But you're doing the Rock the Spot at the end.
Yeah, that's in December. No, he changed the dates to December. But yeah, it's early December because it conflicted with another graffiti event they're doing in Phoenix at the same time called All City, going All City. And so he didn't want to have the two schedules conflict. He wanted them to do their thing. And then, but regardless, yeah, it'll be in December.
Just a big ass graffiti mural festival.
They call it a graffiti jam.
Graffiti jam.
Yeah. I hang out with kids who literally are like, I was painting with a 30-year-old guy the other day and we were talking about his mom for some reason. Mom came up and I was like, how old is your mom? And he's all 48. And I'm like, dude, I might have known your fucking mom. And here I am, you're 30, you're a grown man with kids. Like, yeah, that's a trip, dude. Like, I could have been your fucking dad, dude. I probably could have hung out with your mom. I probably partied with your mom, dude. Just probably.
She's from Tucson.
Yeah, I probably saw your mom's titty. Just saying.
At a house party.
At a house party.
In 96.
I didn't take it out. She took it out.
Right.
Because, yeah. Because Boys and Men was playing.
So for those of you who are watching us on YouTube, just behind you, Jerry, is that your Jon Snow costume for Halloween? What is that?
That's Megan's cape. She bought it at the Oregon Country Fair. It's got feathers on it, but it's got like an accordion like fabric so she can open it up. And I was at Oregon Country Fair and she thought, I'll buy a cape. And there's no practical application for it, but it's turning into a Halloween costume. She's flying down to LA to West Hollywood for a big Hollywood Halloween party the end of the month.
I imagine when you said flying down, I imagined her on some strings, like coming with down that cape. Into the, yes.
Like she
yes.
just stands on the roof and opens up the accordion material and the fucking and wind takes her. Yeah. And then she descends into West Hollywood.
What is the costume? Is it just a bat?
She wants to be, her costume this year is Poison Ivy. but it's basically just an excuse for her to wear a bunch of green shit because the cape is green. Nice. But no, that's the cape.
Got it.
That's the cape. And then that's a really old painting I did of my sister-in-law, and it was not received well by anyone because everyone's like, why are you painting your sister-in-law? That's creepy. And I was like, it was the only photo reference I could find. I wanted to do a women's study.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
it
wasn't
personal. It was
It just was like, you have an interesting face, and I want to get better at painting women's faces. This was like from 2006, I think, or seven. No, it was after we got married, 2010. Regardless, I hate that painting. I want to get rid of it, but Megan won't let me. So it sits in her office. This is her office. This is my Jon Snow costume. Yeah.
Yes. I was thinking of what was the battle of the,
The Battle of the Bastards.
Yes. Yes. That's what I was imagining.
This year I'm going as Jon Snow with a coke problem. So I'll be Jon Blow.
But I do want to come down for one of these Rock the Spot events or something.
Yeah, you should.
I want to do like a full, maybe like a mini documentary about
it. We've talked about this. And Coda was down, I was down. I've got like slowly but surely little murals here and there and just painting a lot. Like that's all I do now is I paint and work on murals. I don't tattoo. I might have to start next year. Our financial situation changes a little bit next year. So I might end up maybe not working in a shop, but maybe tattooing again. I don't know. We'll see. That's kind of up in the air.
Yeah.
I don't really want to, but you know, it's a job that I know how to, it's the only thing I know how to do. So I don't know if I can be a 48-year-old dishwasher, but I know I can get a job washing dishes at Roberts, which is a pie place here in Tucson.
You like pie? I mean, don't get the job at the pie place, man. That might not be good for the waistline.
I did some mural work for them and they all loved me and I got along with them really well. And I was like, man, I could wash dishes here. I don't know why I had that thought. I was just in the kitchen rinsing out paint pots. And I was like, I remember all this equipment I could use with my fucking eyes closed.
I mean,
yeah, it should be met with silence. It's not an aspiration to have. So I'm like, well, I guess I'll go get some tattoo supplies. And
I could wash dishes here. Okay, maybe
it's time to just put on a nice podcast. I could just blow the guys away with some Chapo Trap House while I'm washing dishes. Just they're just like, it gets freaky back here, huh, fool? I'm like, hell yeah, it gets freaky, dude. Workers need to seize the means of production, fool. We need to seize this pie.
We need to seize this pie. I bet
sell it ourselves.
Yeah, I need to come down there. Again, I don't know about this year, but like, so the whole idea is I have this whole vision in my head of the, you know, the funny story that you and Coda always tell about meeting each other and all that like getting thrown in the trash can and that whole thing when you were teenagers.
Right. Right.
And so basically
I never got thrown in a trash can though.
Did somebody?
No. But they bullied me though.
Oh.
They absolutely.
Maybe
coerced me.
Why did I think somebody got thrown in a trash can?
Oh, I got thrown in a trash can in high school, but that was
not
Coda Jerry Orson story is long, but it's basically he was in a different graffiti crew than I was, and they were mad at his graffiti crew were the guys who were established in Tucson, and we were the young guys coming up getting more established because we were tagging on fucking everything because we were all 16, 17, 18 and fearless, and they didn't like that. They were like, oh, you're on all of our shit now, so we want to battle you, we want to have a beef with you, and so we'll have this set period of time where we tag as much as we can, and then I don't know who would determine the winner. I have no idea.
Right,
they just wanted to flex on us, and Coda was part of that group, and like it got to the point where we were fucking doing shit, like we were going downtown and climbing up buildings and painting, you know, rooftops and stuff, and they decided to tag on my house.
So
they threw the little tag in my house. So I'm like, shit, they know where I live. Like, I'm gonna get jumped. Like, because these dudes would jump people and beat the shit out of people. And then one night on Halloween, they showed up and knocked on my door. And I opened up the door and I'm like, fuck, we got to fight in this little apartment. And then they all walked in and started hugging us and shaking our hands and being like, we like you guys. You guys are cool. We want to meld our graffiti crews together. And that night, Coda was dressed up like David Lee Roth because it was Halloween night. He had like a silk scarf and shit. And he and I immediately clicked because I was like this, because all the other dudes I was writing graffiti with were like not, they were just graph writers. They were cool guys. They were all my friends. We all laughed. But Coda was like into Led Zeppelin and read books and like was super into the Dark Tower. And so was I. Mm-hmm. And he was the one who introduced me to Bukowski and shit. And I was like, yo, this dude is literate. Like this Catholic school guy is fucking totally illiterate and a fucking great artist. And so that's how we hit it up. But there was a whole antagonistic aspect to our relationship that still remains to this day.
to this
day. He's gonna listen to this. He fucking bullies me.
He's listening to it right now, like whatever he's listening to.
Taking notes, son of a bitch. But no, and so that was, but just that story is like, you get into the details of it and it's pretty fucking funny because it was 1992, 93, and we were all kids.
Yeah.
That was fucking 30 some years ago. It was 30 so years
that's,
ago.
That's the film I want to make around this, you know, 30 plus years later, 30 years later. Mm-hmm. It's been 30 years. You guys have been,
we've been friends together for 30 years. Holy shit. I've been friends with you since I was 23.
Yeah.
So what is that? 48, 25 years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've been friends with him 30 years. Just have Thomas Lennon play me from Reno 911. I said, just have Thomas Lennon play me in the movie. Because everyone always like, you look like that guy from Reno 911, but old. And I'm like, he's fucking older than me.
I always wanted Philip Seymour Hoffman to play me.
I know, but he's dead, man. R.I.P. He's gone. Yeah, I know. R.I.P., I know. Dude. At least, hey, man, can you imagine him in the fentanyl? He'd be gone.
Gone.
Yeah.
Gone.
I mean, he's gone now, but can you imagine if he had made it to fentanyl? Like, I remember using William Burroughs as an example of, like, what living with an addiction positively would be like. And then I saw a picture of William Burroughs at 80, and I was like, that dude looks like a fucking mantis shrimp. Like, looks like shit.
This is not positive.
This is not positive. Like, I would, that was the other part of my addiction that was so funny. I would see other alcoholics who are older than me living the life, and I'm like, that person, I can.
They're doing it. I can do that. Yeah,
but not knowing that, like, a year later, they couldn't control their bladders and shit. You know what I'm like?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sustainable. So I think we'll put a pin in it there with holding our bladders.
Going pee-pee. Doing some the pee-pee man.
For those of you thinking that Jerry's going to be back every week, that is not the case. But
I'll be back again. We can do it every few weeks or something. I'd love to do it.
Yeah. So I will be reaching out.
Are you going
to
be doing these regularly?
I think so. I think I'm going to try and put together... get a list of people and try to find some people that I find fun and interesting, or just have the, you know, genuine story. And, you know, so I will be out there. If you know anyone, if you're curious about it,
Coda. Or
if you... I love Coda. Coda's great. I mean, just because it doesn't jibe with how I do things doesn't mean it ain't working for him.
Nah, he's killing it. He's doing good.
But yeah, man, maybe I'll be out in November or December. I don't know. Or, you know, you guys won't be doing this shit in the summer, but.
No, absolutely not. It's always a winter thing because it's just fall or winter. And this fall has been hot, too. So thank God we're not doing it till December. Hit me up. Well, you will. We're always in contact with each other regardless of the pod. Yeah. I mean, I talk to you once every few weeks and you text me. You text me on various social media sites. It's always a picture of some dude with a rat tail. And you're like, this is Coda. I love that the end portion of this podcast is us talking about him, but it always is so funny that it'll be a dude in cut off sleeves and a rat tail, and you're like getting some fucking Coda vibes right now.
That's basically
it. Fuck yeah, you are.
No, I think it was Bigfoot smoking a cigarette watching the Bigfoot sunset smoking or something. A
cigarette, because that's what he does on his porch, man.
All right, yeah, man. I'll be in touch, and we'll talk soon.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Later.
Later.
Thanks again for listening. Our music, as always, is by Neglect. You can find more of his stuff at neglect.bandcamp.com.
And you can find us on all social media platforms that matter, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And you can reach us at asforalcoholic@gmail.com.
Talk to you later.
Yeah.